Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We'll just go through the quick obligatories. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and this is the only show that provides you the academic facts of our Constitution, how it was defined, the terms and conditions of the Constitution, and bottom line, the only way we're going to be able to restore, get the federal government back into the compliance of the Constitution, and restore our constitutional republic as the framers had placed us on, the path, that course that they placed us on. Because there is no reason why America, this constitutional republic, cannot be a beacon to the world of liberty, or beacon of liberty to the world. Anyway, forgive me. Excuse me. As you know, and everybody's probably heard by now, Rush Limbaugh passed away today, and so my hat goes off. And my heart goes out to all of those who are personally affected by his passing. Rush Limbaugh was one of those that really touched me. I remember his TV show, and I remember getting energized about conservative principles and values. Prior to Rush, I had already started getting attuned and aligned with the Constitution, because as somebody that has taken an oath to the Constitution, the United States Marine Corps, I was pretty, let's just say, when you realize that you're putting your life on the line, you kind of want to understand what that thing is that you're taking an oath to support and defend. And so Rush was kind of like a turning point, because it just seemed like there was really no center. There was really no organization. There was the Republican Party. But as we've explored, and as I've defined for you, the Republican Party is really a part of the problem. They are a laissez-faire by design party, and they deliberately want to ensure that their politicians are unaccountable to the people and to the party. Well, any party that wants to stand on the tenets of integrity must have some forms of control over those who wear their brand. And as far as I am concerned, because the Republican Party has no control over their brand, I mean, shoot, look at what Liz Cheney has done. Look at what some of the other Democrats, or I should say, rhinos, they're actually Republicans, but the rhinos in Congress who have constantly treaded and ripped and shredded the Constitution. Now, I'll tell you that Trump is not. He is not a constitutionalist. I mean, he needs to start getting with the program. The problem is that he's constantly putting himself around and trusting people that do not understand the Constitution. And so if we have the opportunity to get the Supreme Court to do its job, they will be presented with the opportunity. Whether we have the opportunity to get them to do their job, that's their choice, right? Congress had to make a cognitive decision. Pence and Pelosi and the rest of Congress had to literally decide that they were going to ignore the Constitution and accept an unconstitutional electoral college. And in so doing, they seated a president that was unconstitutionally seated. You cannot take an unconstitutional electoral college and use that to seat the president. So we're in this midst of a constitutional crisis. This is what I've been telling you. And it's going to persist as long as Joe is in the White House. Now, if Congress would have thrown out the Electoral College and they went in and they voted, and we saw how each state voted for the president, then we would go, okay, all right, they did their job, and it's a legitimate placement of the president or choosing of the president. But that's not what happened. So bottom line, the Supreme Court, either they are the guardians still of the Constitution or they're not. And many a times, and I tell people all the time, the Supreme Court has gotten it wrong way too many times. And the real reason why is because they all believe in case law and precedents. They've all been conditioned well over the past 150, maybe 180 years that they've started injecting case law and precedents into our constitutional form of government as far as the Constitution and the federal government. There was no allowance in the Constitution for case law and precedents, to be clear. It's either in the Constitution or it is not. There's no, well, we see emanations of penumbras that lend to a person's privacy. No, no, no. Is life, is a person's privacy, whether they go into a healthcare clinic or anything else, is that a protected or an enumerated power in the Constitution? No, it is not. This goes down to that quote that Mr. Iredell made during the ratification debates, and as far as I'm concerned, this baby is probably the most powerful comment that, you know, that was out there, and he puts it into context, so he puts this into context regarding, you know, the North Carolina ratification debates, so the people can actually see this whole concept of, wow, I did not understand that the Constitution is a compact or like a power of attorney. And I'm just going to read this real quick. Did any man ever hear before that at the end of a power of attorney, it was said that the attorney should not exercise more power than was there given him? Suppose, for instance, a man had lands in the counties of Anson and Coswell, and he should give another a power of attorney to sell his lands in Anson. Would the other have any authority to sell the lands in Coswell? Or could he, without absurdity, say, 'Tis true, you have not expressly authorized me to sell the lands in Coswell, but as you had lands there and did not say I should not, I thought I might as well sell those lands as the other.' A Bill of Rights, as conceived, would not only be incongruous but dangerous. No man, let his ingenuity be what it will, could enumerate all the individual rights relinquished by this Constitution. Suppose, therefore, an enumeration of many, or of a great many, but an omission of some, and that long after traces of our present disputes were at end, any of the omitted rights should be invaded, and the invasion of the complained of, what would be the plausible answer to the government to such a complaint? Would they not naturally say, we live at a great distance from the time when this Constitution was established. We can judge of it much better by the ideas of it entertained at the time than by any ideas of our own. The Bill of Rights passed at the time showed the people did not think every power retained was not given. Else this Bill of Rights was not only useless but absurd. But we are not at liberty to charge in absurdity upon our ancestors who have given such a strong proofs of their sense as well as their attachment to liberty. So long as the rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights remain unviolated, you have no reason to complain." And there you go. So you see, it doesn't matter whether privacy was listed in the Bill of Rights. It wasn't, and they stepped into it and said it was, and they used this as a doorway. There was no jurisdiction whatsoever. And the states, all of the states, should have challenged the federal court to say, show us the enumerated power where privacy was something that was guaranteed by the federal government. It was not. We have a right of conscience. We have a right of free speech, religious expression, assembly, petitioning our government, the right to bear arms, the right from illegal search and seizure, and those types of things. But there is no jurisdiction over life, health care. There's no jurisdiction over energy. There's no jurisdiction over housing. There is no jurisdiction over race, over disabilities, many of the things that the federal government has usurped. And so, bottom line, we have a real problem today, and we need to get the states to stand up. Now, Rush Limbaugh got me, like I said, he got me oriented towards understanding that we need to become far more vocal, we need to become active, and so forth. But it kind of drops there, because it didn't take long. Well, actually, it took a while, but it didn't take too long after the discovery of Rush, the movement of the conservative movement within the Republican Party, the Tea Party. Because bottom line, when you look at how things were prior to Rush, there weren't really a lot of really good conservative movements. And so many people have been so, well, what's the best word for it? I'll just say so emphatic about, you know, trying to preserve conservative principles and the Constitution, that the Tea Party and other movements, huge movements, have arisen. And so, in other words, the sleeping minority, or I should say the majority, the sleeping majority has started to awaken. And I think more people, when they start realizing that this contract, one, is in jeopardy and it protects us, we need to step up. We'll be right back.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, and yes, we have that comment line. And so if you want to ask a question, you want to pipe in, by all means, just send us a message, and we'll actually play it as we had done before. And so what I wanted to kind of get into is, you know, this tribute, this really short tribute to Rush, because he was the pivot guy that actually changed the direction and gave focus and meaning to a conservative movement. We're at a point where, as I was going into break, we're at a point where there still is a high percentage of the sleeping majority, where not enough people have gotten active. There are a lot of people that, you know, they still vote. but that's not good enough. We have to start getting active. If you're not a part of the solution and you're not engaged in solving the problem, then you are a part of the problem. And so I guess that might be an insult to some, but bottom line, what are you going to do about it? Wishing won't make it so. And, praying might help, but bottom line, it comes down to all of us. There was no way America was going to be forged by the hand of God. It was inspired by the divine hand of providence because these men did what was necessary. And we don't need 100% as proven. But let me kind of move on because I want to get back into what we were talking about yesterday about ideologies and so forth. So don't forget that the next Red Pill Expo is coming up June 4th to the 6th. Go online, look, just Google Red Pill Expo, and you'll be able to get your tickets. You'll be able to see as the information starts flowing forward who's going to be speaking and so forth. There you go. And as you also know, we are asking that you help us with our listener drive. But what we really want is we want to help, you give them something to sink their teeth into. Possibly, if we get the go-ahead, if I hear back from Bob that Bob has made it home safe, that he is no longer out in the ops of filing in court, then we will drop the news possibly tomorrow. But we are planning just to make sure, because I may not even know by the time tomorrow's show runs. I may not hear from Bob until tomorrow night. So we will be dropping the information, what's happened and what is going on, and how we're putting the Supreme Court into the corner. They are going to have to do their job. They're going to have to prove that they are still the guardians of the Constitution. If not, then people need to raise more than just a ruckus. They need to demand. You need to get out to your state houses and you need to start demanding that your state start enforcing the Constitution, because every vestige, every aspect of the federal government has failed and is failing us and driving us off this cliff into communism. Yesterday, we were talking about the ideologue, and there's different types of ideologues, and we have different, I'll just say, different sides to our ideology. There's the religious, political, and they're very much intertwined. But as we were talking and defining what the paradigm was and the ideology that was established by the framers, it was one of a non-denominational ideology of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, that everybody had their right. Now, there's this populist movement, or there's this populist ideology that, hey, as long as we all compromise, we all come to an agreement that this is okay, then there you go. We can do this because we agree. Well, the Constitution doesn't allow that. The Constitution, by design, is not about political compromise. It's about the letter of the law and what enumerated powers exist. This is why we go through the presidential vetoes of the Department of Transportation. So you understand that if the power doesn't exist, they can't operate it. And as George Nicholas said during the ratification debates, because he was really clear that when it came down to the federal government being able to do anything outside of the enumerated powers, whether that be in regards to a treaty, whether that be in regards to taking on debt or anything else, he basically clearly said that they cannot make, in definition of a treaty, he basically said, quote, "They can, by this, make no treaty which shall be repugnant to the spirit of the Constitution or inconsistent with the delegated powers." In other words, if they don't have the delegated powers, they can't even spend the money in taking on debt. Because what is a debt? A debt is a contract. It's an agreement to say, you're going to give us money so that we can spend it on these things, and we're going to pay you back. the things that they're going to spend it on, they can't assume that debt for, because they don't have the authority to spend that money. So, as you can see, we've got a real mess, but it's not as bad as anyone wants to make it. It is a concocted, you know, haze of smoke and mirrors, and everybody is just all confused. All we've got to do is open the doors and windows, let that smoke, you know, just bellow out of the building here, and we can clearly see that the federal government has built a monolith of power that is all built on cards. There's no constitutional founding in what they have done. Even the debt is not constitutionally founded, even though the Constitution allows them to have, you know, the good credit and faith and create debt. They can only do it with the enumerated powers. And we can easily go back to before Johnson, not Johnson, who was it? Woodrow Wilson, because Woodrow Wilson was the one that in the progressive movement that instituted the IRS, or actually the individual income tax. Remember the progressive income tax? Sorry, I've got to keep up with myself here. What Wilson did was he said, we're not making enough money, so we actually have to tax your income because of all the spending that we're doing. Well, nobody ever challenged him on the concept that maybe somebody did, but nobody challenged him well enough to prove that the money that they were spending on were not enumerated powers. By this time, by the early 1900s, the concept of an enumerated constitution, like a specific or specified power of attorney, was what the Constitution was, and they just can't take it upon themselves to spend money on those things. They have to get the state's approval. So even if the states go along with their charade, then what we're looking at is, you know, the states are culpable, but they are the ones that have the ultimate say. And it's time the states blow down this house of cards. So anyway, so we have this populist movement was about compromise. And so one of the things that we started seeing that the founding of the Republican Party by Madison and Jefferson was really based on strict interpretation of the Constitution, that those powers don't exist, that you can't compromise and allow yourself to assume powers even if the states don't stand up and do something, which was the genesis, which was the impetus, the catalyst of the 1798 resolutions. And the thing that drove that was the federal government compromised your ability of political speech with the Alien and Sedition Acts. And so when Thomas Jefferson and Madison kind of stood up, they said, hey, look, you can't do these things. Jefferson clearly audited the Constitution and said, this bill violates this part, and this part of the Constitution, and so forth and so on. He did it with every bill and proved how each of these bills violated the Constitution on how it was defined. Therefore, as they moved forward to the other states and the other states ignored, they knew that they needed to act. And so they committed, or they basically pulled off the only political coup that I'm aware of in American history, where they created a party and basically about a year and a half's time. I mean, what they did was amazing, but it was because the power or the name recognition that both of these men had and the integrity that they had. They were able to actually unseat a sitting president who was going for re-election for his second term. And they were able to unseat enough Federalists, or what they were called Federalists. Now, one of the things I had a conversation with Keith Broder is because Madison was a Federalist, and Madison and the Federalist who defined the Constitution, actually, I believe that the anti-Federalists who were against the Constitution, like Patrick Henry, and many of those guys that were anti-Federalists, look at what happened with all of these guys that were supposedly handpicked from Virginia, Patrick Henry himself, that went into the Senate. These, all of these guys that were a part of Virginia who were anti-federalists, as soon as they got to the seat of power, they all of a sudden were big centralized government fans. They weren't anti-federalists anymore. And so the anti-federalists actually, I truly believe, were a big government paradigm. And so when we look at what ended up happening in the split between the Federalist Party, I believe Madison remained as the Federalist that he was, but the Federalist Party had basically adopted something different, and so the real Federalist had to change into a Republican Party. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so going into the break, I was trying to help differentiate what happened to the Federalist Party. Most of the people of America were actually really Federalists. Most people did not realize that there had been a change, and like a twinkling of the eye. Many of the Federalists are those who claim to be Federalists, who were actually, some of them were anti-Federalists, some of them were Federalists, in their positions of the ratification. Those who were at the seat of government instantly converted themselves. And this is how you think you elect a really good person. Then they get to Congress, and next thing you know, they're equally culpable to the swamp. And they're doing exactly what the swamp has been doing, and they're not doing what they told you they were going to do. Wow, surprise? Well, so what ended up happening was these men at the mantle of power who went in as anti-federalists and federalists realized with the tutelage of Hamilton and others that we can help now imply and aggrandize, and we can start moving in an opposite direction from how the Constitution was defined, but we've got to do it gradually and slowly so that the people will be none the wiser. Well, they didn't bank on what the Alien and Sedition Acts would really do. They didn't think that Madison and Jefferson would go down the path that they did. I don't think that they were banking on this. But Madison and Jefferson both clearly set precedents that the states need to stand up whenever the federal government actually steps out of line. And so they sent the rally cry, literally. They went out to the states and said, hey, we need to do this. And when the states themselves, the state legislatures, basically insinuated them and you know, trying to be, you know, revolutionary and trying to undermine the government, the people didn't buy that. And what I mean by that is because Madison and Jefferson first took it to the states, and to hold the states, they needed to get involved. And so because the states didn't, then they took it to the people. And what they did was they created the Republican Party. When asked for details on this type of Republican Party, because Republican is kind of a generic form of government, Jefferson added the adjective type of spin. Well, it's a Democratic Republican Party. And so that's how some people have confused what Madison and Jefferson created as a Republican Party as a Democratic Party. But actually, when one reads Jefferson's first inaugural address, he said, we're all Republicans and we're all Federalists. He didn't say we're all Democrats or Democratic Republicans. He said, we're all Republicans and we're all Federalists, and we need to start uniting on the Constitution. The majority of the people started getting it. And this is how they were successful in influencing people, that the federal government had literally deviated from how the Constitution was defined. They violated the terms of the contract with these Alien and Sedition Acts. Excuse me. And so I apologize. I think I might have a lingering effect from the pneumonia. So that's why I'm coughing a little bit. But anyway, what ended up happening was they basically created a monopoly of political power in the Republican Party. Because from Jefferson through Madison through Monroe and into John Quincy Adams, the Republicans maintained power. Well, that doesn't mean that there weren't powers out there. And they actually saw the Anti-Federalists and others actually saw, or I should say the remnants of the old big government Federalists who perverted the name of the Federalists, those people actually saw that the Republicans were heading down a path that was going to create an abolition of slavery, because Madison was good on his promise of the 1808 shutting down of the slave trade. And so this started creating some tension. And so for political compromise, men of the North, of the abolition states, started compromising with the slave states so that they could basically congeal or coagulate, so they could solidify, come together on the power base of big government. And it was Martin Van Buren who created the Democratic Party, and the first president of the Democratic Party was Andrew Jackson. And it was all about a grandizing of government, even though Andrew Jackson was not on board with the Department of Transportation and some other things. He was on board with using executive powers, using the spoil systems, and so forth. I mean, there were four really serious things that he overstepped the bounds of the presidency, more so than anybody else. But as I say, even James Monroe violated the Constitution when he allowed the Missouri Compromise to actually move forward so that Congress could dictate slavery upon states. Anyway, so this Republican Party kind of fizzled out, and the Democratic Party became a dominant party, because all of a sudden, it wasn't necessarily about violating speech or anything, but it was about grandizing government's abilities and their roles, because the Democratic Party started helping and colluding with the railroad, agriculture, and other businesses and so forth. And all of that was unconstitutional. And it started growing and growing. And when Lincoln came along and revitalized the Republican Party, the Republican Party actually just became a differentiator of big government. Lincoln didn't say, we got to get back to the basics, we got to get back to the framework of the Constitution. By no means did he state that. Lincoln actually overexerted his power and authority as the President of the United States. in basically waging war on the southern states. Bottom line, what we're looking at is this flipping of the Republican Party. And what ended up happening, because the Republican Party, again, like I said, it was just the other side of the big government coin. But back in Madison and Jefferson's day, there were two separate coins. There was the big government coin and the limited and defined constitution coin of the true Republican Party. Why am I going into these details? Because the Republican Party today is still of the same coin of big government. The only party that is of the Madison Jefferson Republican Party of the enumerated defined powers and limited government coin is the Constitution Party. So after the Civil War, the two parties kind of came together, and this was the forming or the beginning of the alliance that eventually formed into a uniparty. This is where the party actually started taking control of elections and the Electoral College, and they did this all unconstitutionally. So I'm just trying to paint this picture so that you can understand that, you know, the party is one of the big subversives of moving away from the defined constitution and the enumerated powers. And so what are we to do about it? Well, I am telling you that if you realize that the party is the problem, and here is the reality, sadly, over 50% of voters in America vote blindly on their loyalty to a party. Over 50%. But here's the irony. A recent poll stated that 52% of Americans favor a viable third-party solution. Doesn't mean that some of these loyalists, but I think people recognize that if there is a different option, then maybe, they can have a level of competition that would actually challenge their loyalty. I am here to tell you that if the people are going to unite on the Constitution, you have to do so with the party that is closest, that can be moved to be parallel to the Republican Party of Madison and Jefferson, could and should be the Constitution Party, period. The Constitution Party is the only party that is in the position on the political side that will save our republic. But I'm just telling you that it won't be a party, it won't be a person, and it won't be an organization. It will be the good, righteous people of America that will save our Constitution. It will be the righteous people of America that will pull us back off of that cliff, or as we have dived off that cliff, like it seems today, we will be the ones that will actually save us in landing into the water so that we don't make it to the communist lands. So I'm going to give you, this is a metaphor I kind of gave everybody, that they have, the deep state and those that are in power, have already got us airborne. We're really moved off of the promised land, what I would say is the land of liberty. And we're airborne, flying, we're gliding over to the land of communism, where liberty is lost. It's the lost land of liberty, or the land of lost liberty. We are flying over a body of water at this point in time. If we seize control, we may not be able to guide this aircraft, back to the land of liberty. But if we get it into the water, we can drag it back. And I'm just saying, and I'm using this water as a form of austerity. We will face some level of austerity as we dismantle, because there's going to be lots of people with their hands out that are all of a sudden realize, wow, I actually have to get a job. I'm not going to be able to just have government support me anymore. I can't, the government won't pay me for being a part of the communist revolution anymore. What am I going to do? Well, you're going to have to get a job, or we'll be happy to ship you out of here to your favorite communist country. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument
of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic. I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the whole reason why I kind of went through this encapsulating of the party and, you know, liberty, ideology, and all of these types of things to help you kind of understand how important it really is, because there are people that are playing in the party, even in the Constitution Party, that are playing with what I would say ideologies that actually have nothing to do with our constitutional ideology. Our constitutional ideology is that the compact defines the very specific powers. If you are getting involved in politics, then if you are either looking at a myopic issue, whether that be abortion, education, vaccinations, whatever the issue is, then you have lost the real understanding of the constitutional ideology. Because if you're just stating that this thing is the problem, we got to stop this one thing. No, we have to stop the noncompliance to the Constitution. We solve everybody's problem when we get the federal government out of the business that they have no business meddling in. We have to get them into compliance. And so one of these things that we need to really, you know, drive home is this paradigm of a limited and defined government based on enumerated powers. If it's not enumerated, it does not exist. Now, let me get into some marketing, because there are things that are afoot that are actually, and Jared Griffin's News, we reported on this, how California was going to start buying up houses that go into foreclosure and properties that go into foreclosure. Well, on top of that, there are organizations and individuals, corporations and individuals, who are actually actively going out and buying up farms. This needs to be addressed, and I think America is better served by, and I'm going to be clear on this, America is better served by family and local operated farms. In other words, where the interest and the people living there have the interest of what's best for the town and for themselves and their family, and what they decide to grow and the things that they do in making, you know, the products, food, and services for those of us who depend on them. We have to protect this market. We have to protect this industry. And so when Bill Gates and other corporations are going out buying up farms, we can't allow this to happen. Or more importantly, we have to make sure that they can't actually own the land anymore. We have to get to a point where the states need to start passing laws that protect this strategic interest. And the states need to look at farming and these types of things, even manufacturing. But let's start with farming, because farming is a fundamental essential. If Bill Gates has his way, we'll all become vegans. And there'll be, you know, I think he forecasts by 2035 that meat will no longer be available, that you will be eating what they tell you to eat. And so, again, this goes down to this compulsion. This goes down to taking away our liberty and our freedom of choice. And so I believe states have the ability to create a tiered system of taxation with fines on top of this when it comes down to the owning of the land. Because who has the sovereignty over that land? The land can be taxed by the states, and the states do have sovereignty. Whether these sovereign citizen movements out there will agree with this, this is the fundamental tenets. I mean, even in the old days, when government was very small and, you know, wasn't as nearly as big as it is today, we looked at, you know, how the government was able to have poll tax. You owned land, you had to pay a poll tax for you to vote. There was probably other taxes that you had to participate in. Either they taxed your goods, somehow there was a form of taxation. Even Adam Smith states that there has to be some level of taxation for government to exist, and we have to be the arbiters. We, the people, and the states have to be the arbiters of what the same level of taxation in government needs to be. We can't let government get out of hand, or it will destroy us. And so anyway, let's talk a little bit about this tiered system of taxation and ways we can go about this. And I believe that states can actually create a hefty tax break for family farms who live on and operate their farms. In other words, it is an enticement for individuals to own and operate their land and farm. After that, so now we have individuals that own the farm and they're operating, so it's a family farm. So we have to have real good incentives in moving people back into that direction. Then we have to create increased burdens of taxes on corporate farms that actually operate. So let's just say ABC Incorporated that forms, and they kind of start buying up land, and they're doing all the corn growth for this, you know, what is that, ethanol that goes into your gas tank. And so they want to grow this crop, and they need land, so they buy this land. And so there's a corporation that actually operates farms in their state, and their presence is in the state. In other words, a corporate headquarters, so you're getting the revenue off of their, you know, the money that they're making in the resale of their corn and so forth. But there needs to be a level of tax on top of that. And there needs to be even a consideration that when corporations use land for farming purposes or anything like that, I'm of the inclination that states need to pass laws that they have to lease that land. And so that land has to be owned by a citizen of the state. And as a matter of fact, states need to actually create a law that does not allow a foreigner to own the land. They can lease the land from the original owner to use it for whatever term, for operating, let's say, a hotel, let's say a restaurant, let's say a business. But they can't own the land. They lease the land, and they operate, within those taxes. But I believe that state governments need to actually start laying heavier taxes on corporate farms that operate in the state that have no corporate presence in the land. Let's say Heinz. Heinz has tomato farms all over the United States, and they're actually operating those along with a lot of other types of farms and growing crops, and they have no presence in your state, and so they're pulling all of this stuff out. There needs to be even a heavier tax on corporate land and farming. Now, I understand the fact that this starts raising the price of the corporate Heinz products, but this would actually create the competition for your Smithville community within your state to start manufacturing similar products of even better quality for ketchup and mustard and pickles and those types of things. Because what we have done is we've basically made America for sale to the corporations at the advantage of lowering the cost, because the monopoly or the marginal cost of once you get to a certain size, your operating costs get a lot less. Well, okay, so states can start actually creating taxation so that it becomes competitive for local manufacturing of these types of products. I'm just here to tell you that by doing so, it starts breaking up this monopoly and it breaks the control, because you have to start looking at corporations like the Heinz Corporation as a globalist corporation that has no care about your liberty. They're funding a part of this global takeover and this reset. All of these major conglomerates are all moving us and supporting this concept of moving us into a communist corporation government. We need to start looking at severe taxes on corporate farms that are not farming the land and or raising cattle or doing anything. In other words, they're just letting the land sit. And so states need to look at, you know, any type of corporation, whether they have a presence in or outside of the state, if they're just letting that land go to waste, then the state needs to make an assessment that we believe you, if you actually grew corn, you would pay us this much, and this is what you need to pay us. So in other words, they may be getting subsidies from the federal government for not using their land, but because they're a corporation, they will have to pay the taxes of what that land should have produced anyway. And in so doing, we now have revenue coming into the state from corporations that are actually being manipulative and, you know, and getting subsidized by the federal government on the side. We have to start answering how government or the federal government rewards some of these things that helps lend to the manipulation of our economy, our consumption. Because remember, what is communism? Communism is the control of production as well as consumption. Even though Marx and Engels didn't talk about the control of consumption, when you think about it, when they implemented communism, they weren't just the means of controlling production, but they were the ones that told you could only buy one loaf of bread, the means of consumption as well. We've got more of this, we've got more marketing, and we've got that big announcement with Bob Schultz coming up. I'm G.R. Mobley, we're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.